This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Welcome to Business Made Personal. This podcast is brought to you by the insurance industry's leading education and events provider, ANZIF, via their Careers in Insurance initiative. I'm Mark Silvera. Today, I've got with me Jessica Jenkins.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good. A little bit of background on Jessica. In 2003, Jessica Jenkins became the youngest elected representative and deputy mayor. She was also named Young Citizen of the Year that same year. Over Jessica's 20-plus years in the insurance industry, Jessica has been named Insurance Business Magazine's Elite Women, also Underwriting Agency BDM of the Year in 2022, and Five-Star BDM of the Year in 2021. Jessica is also a mother to six-year-old Mia and co-founder of the Women's Wellness Hour of Power. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a little bit. The question I love asking people is, give us a little bit of an idea in terms of your background growing up.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in the burbs, so in the western suburbs. Those who are not from Melbourne, Deer Park, which is part of the city of Brimbank. And my father comes from Italy. My mother comes from Malta. They are migrants, so they came over to the country basically as most migrants did, with not too much. So the city that I grew up in was very multicultural. They had, from what I recall, probably about 150 different nationalities. So I kind of felt like I was in Little Malta and Little Italy, to be honest. It was great. It really did, expose me to the various different cultures and backgrounds. And I think it helped mum and dad as well adapt to being in a different country, you know?
Look, you know, I'm obviously from an ethnic background as well. There is a tendency for people who migrate into Australia to stay with their own sort of community. Is that what happened with you, or were you a little different?
Yeah, mum had a lot of Maltese friends. So we always had the bingo days or the pastizzis coming out, and dad had a couple of his Italian friends, but it didn't happen that way at school. I've got, friends that I'm still friends with now that are of multiple different backgrounds. I married an Australian, so it didn't happen that way for me. I know a lot of people that did sort of stick to their cultural background, but I think I've always been a little bit of a black sheep, so to speak. For me, not the case.
So talk to me about 2003, where this young girl from Deer Park gets to be the youngest elected representative and deputy mayor at the ripe old age of 19. The same year you were named Citizen of the Year. What was the motivation? What was the thinking behind it? What pushed you into that sort of political sphere?
Yeah, good question. I think becoming a voice for the youth of my generation, I felt at the time, especially being a young woman, that we just didn't have a voice, and I really wanted to change that. And I guess the opportunity came up, and I did the door knocking and the campaigning. We'd always sort of been a political family, so we'd been around people that were involved locally, which helped. But I obviously did the groundwork with getting out and about and really pushing that youth agenda. And, Nelson Mandela, somebody who I admired and respected, sort of once said, "The youth today are the leaders of tomorrow, so why shouldn't they have a voice ultimately?" That was the reason why I wanted to get involved.
Can we talk about the political side of things just for a moment? As most of us would probably only see what we see on the television, we're not really involved in the machinations of politics. How did you find it? Was it more challenging than you expected it to be?
Absolutely brutal. So I initially thought that I'd have a career in politics. I'm now in insurance, so I did my full term and I achieved what I wanted to achieve. But being the grassroots, it's very dirty. You've got a lot of infighting, a lot of bribes happening, a lot of pressure. But also, you've got the ability for your constituents to turn up at one of your meetings and be quite vocal. And you don't have the protection that you do in federal and state parliament, where you've got security guards and, you're not able to speak whilst they're in, you know, once they're in session. So it's a lot more accessible. So therefore, it becomes a lot more, you know, political, and infighting was obviously quite rife back then. So not to say I wouldn't encourage people that wanted to get involved in the political career to go down that track. I think for me, my personality type, I just didn't align with the type of politics associated with that particular grassroots role, if that makes sense.
Do you think you're a bit wide-eyed? Do you think you're a little young getting into it?
Absolutely right. I think I was a bit like a deer in the headlights, to be honest. I remember having the lady that defeated me turn up and, you know, to often a number of the meetings that we held and throwing questions at me. And, you know, the media were there as well, and there were often, you know, stitch-ups. And, you know, I'd never thought that I'd get, you know, frontline news saying I didn't turn up to meetings because I was unwell, because, you know, everybody's entitled to have sick leave. But it was, you know, that wheel spinning of the notion of having a young girl in such a senior role that knocked over somebody that was a little bit more senior. So it was definitely personality developing for sure.
The fact that you're no longer doing it, I think, says it all.
I learned a lot from it. But I think in life, you know, we sort of realize what our personality traits are. And for me, it just wasn't the right career path. You know, not to say it's not the right path for everybody.
Oh, no, no, no. And we're not saying that. We're really talking about your experiences. Would you ever consider going back into politics?
Absolutely not. I think the only time that I would probably consider, you know, going back would probably be in the event where it was to support, you know, whether a particular agenda. So not as a politician per se, but maybe as somebody who can be a bit of a voice to, whether it be, you know, back then the youth, or, you know, somebody in the insurance industry now, around potential legislation changes or all those sorts of things. So not as a politician, but certainly, you know, if there was a need for me to be supporting anybody, then I'd put my hand up to do that.
And so the natural next question is, well, how did you then get into the insurance industry?
That's a great question. So I never planned on getting into the insurance industry. I initially wanted to be a lawyer. I deferred my course. And then I've always had a real excitement for politics, which is what led me down the political path. So I did need to work because I took that 12 months off, that sabbatical, and I lined up my first role at GIO back in the time in a call centre, which was answering calls for home and contents policies. Went through the induction process, made some amazing friends, and never left, to be honest. I think the opportunities that came as a result of being in the industry, you know, lifelong friends, the ability to move into different roles and pivot and grow and develop. I did try to leave, but it threw me back right in there.
It's certainly one of those professions that once you develop your network, that's, for me anyway, that's a thing that sustains you, right?
Absolutely right. And I really didn't think that the industry would give me so much. As I mentioned, lifelong friends, you know, some of my best friends I've met in the industry, you know, because you spend so much time at work. So it's been amazing. I'm loving the insurance industry.
You're probably preaching to the choir. Couple of questions for you. So talking about, you know, you've met some fabulous people. I want to talk about influential people in your life, and not necessarily from the insurance industry, but if I said to you, who was the most influential person in your life, who would you say it was?
Automatically, I think of my dad. You know, he came to this country when he was four and then went back to Italy and then came back again later in life, not knowing much about Australia, the culture. Back then, you know, it wasn't as multicultural as what it is now and as open. So the challenges associated with that alone, adapting, having a young family, working 12 to 15 hour days, but yet still managing to be present in my life, my sister's lives and my brother's life. I actually get emotional talking about it. It really is something that has helped shape and guide me, because it hasn't been easy for him and my mum. They've sort of come here with not much, and watching how they've cared and loved for us and adapted and smiled, although, you know, they're probably going through multiple different challenges coming from a different country, language barriers, you know, food. I know Dad used to say when he went to school, you know, everybody else would have, you know, their Vegemite sandwich, and he'd have a full pack lunch with, you know, your tomato sauce and your various different Italian things in there. And, It was a bit like the movie The Wog Boy. I don't know if you've seen that, but basically that scene where he's bringing out his lunch is pretty much what I'm picturing my dad to be like at school. So very influential, always positive, always there for me. You know, when I've gone through some challenges in my life personally, he's always been very much the light. My mother has as well, of course, but always really positive. And I think that's helped me be the, you know, be the positive person I am today.
And I certainly hear you in terms of, you know, taking your hat off to people who migrate to this country with very little and with a family, right? Because it's not easy. And I know firsthand what that's like. So, and you've usually got no money.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly right. No friends, no money. You know, your language skills are not the best. So, I mean, they've brought with us fantastic food. So thank you to the Italians for that. We certainly enjoy their lovely meals, which is good.
You know, you're talking about your father's lunch. I mean, I remember being at school. I don't know why, but no one would ever swap their Vegemite sandwiches with me for my tongue sandwiches with garlic. I can't understand why.
I'd be lining up for a tongue sandwich over the Vegemite any day.
I want to talk a couple of questions in relation to the co-founding of the Women's Wellness Hour of Power. First of all, what is it? And the second question is, what was the catalyst for you starting that initiative?
It came up during COVID. So my co-founder, Elise, and I, we called each other one evening and I remember feeling quite deflated and frustrated, really, because I had no buffer. So pre-COVID, you know, I used to go to the gym, I'd drop my daughter off at childcare, go into the office. So I had the separation between home and going to work, going to the gym, had my own space, absolutely love my daughter, but I also had the ability to really separate work from home. And like everybody, COVID, you know, took that away. And it was a real struggle. It was a struggle for me mentally. I had dealt with many of things in the past, but managing to deal with the buffers being removed, so to speak, was where we had this conversation. So I rang Elise and I said, Elise, are you going mad? And she had a bit of a chuckle. She said, because Elise had a 2-year-old, I had a 3-year-old at the time. And she said, I am actually. And I said, I'm feeling extremely overwhelmed. I don't know if this is, you know, if it's anxiety, depression, I don't know what I'm feeling. And she felt exactly the same thing. So we were sort of toing and froing. And I said to her, surely there's other women in the industry that are feeling the same. We don't know how long this is going to go for. We don't know, you know, what the parameters are next. Like we used to sit and, you know, wait for the next press conference to find out whether we can go for a walk outside or whether the parks will be open or closed. So that's basically how the Women's Wellness Hour of Power came about. So we recognised the need for an independent, non-agenda, non-for-profit, safe haven for women in the industry to come together where they can empower, mentor and support one another and basically remember that it's okay not to be okay. And we had a few sessions where we actually focused specifically on mental health, given that it was during that COVID time. So we had a wonderful panel. Jodie Sharman was on the first one, our inaugural event, where she was talking about some of her experience with postnatal. We had another young woman in the industry who did some support around suicide prevention. One of her best friends, unfortunately, committed suicide. So she spoke about her experiences. And then from that, we spoke about the support that's out there. And that's how it evolved. And Mark, it was wonderful because we received multiple messages after that from so many women saying, Jess, Elise, thank you. We're now going to speak to somebody, you know. So it was really just emphasizing that it's okay not to be okay. And it's basically grown. So we had Lane Beachley on our last event. We had close to 100 attendees, which was amazing. And prior to that, we had wonderful Sarah Lyons talking about imposter syndrome. It's really just centered on community network and support. That's how it's all come about. So,
and, you know, with our podcast, we don't advertise, but I think this is such a worthwhile cause. How do people get involved with the Women's Wellness Hour of Power?
So they can reach out to me on LinkedIn. We weren't anticipating for it to grow so rapidly. So we are in the process of getting a website together, our LinkedIn landing page. And what we generally do is we advertise via LinkedIn and they can register that way. If anybody in particular is interested in more information, please reach out to Elise or I, and look out on LinkedIn for our next event, which is in March. It's going to be on International Women's Day. So I won't give away too much on what it's about, but stay tuned for that one.
And what's Elise's surname, please, Jessica?
Hyun, H-U-Y-N.
I want to go back to asking you about your career a little bit. So they say that successful people are results of the mistakes they make, but more importantly, what they learn from those mistakes. What do you think you've learned from the mistakes you've made, Jessica?
Look, I've made many. I think that's life though, right, Mark? So you're absolutely spot on. And look, failure's not nice. We've all been there. I've been there multiple times. Nobody likes the feeling of failing. But for me, I think it's the power of resilience and the growth mindset as well as a result of failing. So what I tend to do now, which I probably wish I knew when I was younger, was to pause and reflect and pay close attention to what the failure was and what I can learn from it. Because, you know, I think the person that I am or the people we are today is all shaped by our failures and what we've learned from that. So for me, it's just really paying attention to what I can learn from that mistake. But yeah, I've definitely made a few. And also trying to, as silly as this sounds, trying to find gratitude in the failure, trying to really, I guess, thank the universe for shaking us up a little bit and forcing us on the path that we're meant to be on through the failure we've experienced.
There's a concept that goes something along the lines of you will keep failing until you learn the message that that event is trying to teach you so you can move on with your life, right?
Absolutely spot on. And it's failure is, you know, just have a look at some of the athletes in the world. They haven't always been able to run the fastest race in the world, or they haven't always been able to be the best swimmer. They've had to learn their best style, or they've had to learn what works for them through failing, right? So it's much the same with my life. I've failed multiple times. You know, in fact, now I tend to help younger up-and-coming women through the failures that I've gone through so that they can learn through my mistakes, right? And same with my daughter. I'm trying to teach her through what I've learned, really.
I'm an employee these days, but I've been a contractor for over 20, 25 years to different organizations within the insurance sector. I've only ever been at one organization that actually embraces failure, that says, hey, we don't mind if you fail as long as you have given it your best shot and you've learned quickly.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it? What an incredible stat.
And a big shout out to NTI because they do it really, really well.
Oh, good on them. That's great.
I want to talk about turning points in your life. If I asked you what's the most significant turning point in your life, what would you say to me, Jessica?
Good question. I think absolutely the birth of my daughter. COVID was a challenge, and I'd probably say that's probably the second significant turning point. I think when you become a mother and you have another human relying on you, or a parent, I should say, for the parents listening, it really does make you realize that you've got somebody else relying on you for guidance and advice. You know, it also, for me, changed my perspective on the important things in life. You know, yesterday I was sitting down on the couch with my daughter playing her Nintendo, and just watching her smile, I'm useless. I couldn't even use the controller properly, but she was showing me how to use it. And she was so excited that I was, you know, that I was playing this little Nintendo with her. You know, previously my definition of where I should be in life potentially and some of the importances of what life should look like changed, because those moments are just priceless. Gives me sort of tingles thinking about, you know, watching her first steps. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, she learned how to ride her bike for the first time without training wheels. So those moments really, I think, humbled me. Yes, work is important and having a career is important. However, you know, at the end of the day, it is those family moments or those special moments that we live for, really.
Do you think you had to alter your work habits? Do you think you had to change your mindset around? Because obviously you're a pretty career-driven individual. Do you think you had to temper that a lot more when you became a mum?
I did. So I went to work relatively early. So Mia was 4 months when I went back. I was made redundant when I was pregnant, when Ace and Chubb merged, when I was 5 months old. So as she got older, I had to really embrace the work-life balance, because otherwise I would miss out on those pivotal moments in her life And thankfully, you know, the industry, and particularly post-COVID, is flexible enough now to allow, you know, working mums to be at, you know, their daughter's first day of school, or to be at, you know, the graduation events. So, but I also feel like the industry has evolved post-COVID as a result of everybody now having the flexibility to work remotely when required, or that hybrid role, which was never in existence before. So yes, absolutely. And I think that the industry has evolved to allow me now to really embrace those non-negotiables, which is those special moments with my daughter.
And let's talk about the evolution of the insurance industry. More years ago than I care to remember, it was predominantly male-dominated. Today, there's around, I think it's a 40% female, 60% male mix, which is far better, I think, for all of us. What I want to know, though, and given the fact that you're a woman, do you think women are afforded or take up the same sort of executive management opportunities as men? Do you think we still have a fair way to go there? Or are you seeing that changing as well?
I think we're in a pivotal point of the industry where we are changing. It's exciting to see. I think, you know, women offer multiple different ideas and thoughts on how businesses should operate. You know, men obviously do a fantastic job as well. I'm certainly not coming in from a sexist angle. I think that the industry is evolving. I think we do have some time to go, but my manager, so she's Anita Lane from Solution Underwriting. She started her business 12 years ago and is a successful entrepreneurial woman. You know, a lot of my mentors are in very senior roles within the industry. I mean, when I started 22 years ago now, you know, that was very, very rare. So I think we're at an exciting stage of the industry. I think, you know, men are certainly open to diversity. Various different insurers in the market, you know, have diversity specific cultures or are trying to bring in more women, which is exciting. There are also diversity specific events which are being run around the world, really. So I think it is changing. It's absolutely improving, and it's exciting to see what the future will look like.
So you mentioned mentors in your response there. I just wanted to ask you, what's the best advice a mentor has ever given you about the industry, Jessica?
Sure. I went through a bit of a stage in my younger days where I thought that I had to be tough, and I thought I had to be different to who I was to fit in. So, you know, going back to the very male-dominated industry, when I started, it was just that. And midway through my career, it was moving more towards, you know, involving diversity. However, it was still quite, you know, male-dominated. So I tried to change to fit into that. I think we were chatting earlier when I was sort of saying, you know, a tiger has certain stripes, a Dalmatian has dots. You know, I'm the type of person that's, you know, quite honest, humble. So I was basically trying to change the stripes that I've been born with, and failed substantially. I lost, you know, a lot of morale with a lot of key people that I'd been dealing with, because they could see that this wasn't the Jess they knew. So going back to your question about what mentors have suggested and really stipulated over the last few years, is just remain true to who you are, you know, remain humble. People react to honesty, integrity. And I think if we are being our true selves, we're able to perform much better. I remember, you know, when I was trying to be that particular way, that I'd feel guilty. I'd go home and I wouldn't be able to really put my head on the pillow and feel relaxed and, you know, true to myself. So remain true to who you are and humble. That's the best advice that I could give to anybody. And that's the best advice that I've been given as well. So I stick truly by that.
Yeah, I think it's that desire to be liked or to be seen as good at what you do that comes at a cost when you aren't being authentic, because people can generally see through it. And the reality of life is not everybody's going to like you.
Spot on. And that's exactly right. And as long as you're authentic to who you are, I think you'll do well. If you try to be somebody that you're not, unfortunately, as you say, you know, people will see through that. And we live in such a fast-paced world. People don't have time for that, Mark. They want authenticity. They want people to be true to who they are, honest. If you can't do something, let them know and move on, you know.
Jessica Jenkins, I want to change tack a little bit with you. In 2021, you were recognized in Insurance Business Magazine as one of its 5-star BDMs, and in 2022 as one of Insurance Business's Elite Women in Insurance. And I think you've also got another accolade as BDM in 2022. What do you think those accolades mean to you?
It's very humbling to receive those accolades. I think from what I understand, they obviously go through the nomination process. So it means that my broker peers and my peers are, you know, obviously recognizing me. But ultimately, the work that I'm doing around supporting other young women in the industry is being recognized most importantly. For me, I'm quite a shy person when it comes to receiving recognition for the work that I do, because I do it genuinely from the good of my heart. I've been grateful that I've had guidance throughout my time in the industry through some wonderful women that have helped supported me. So, you know, it's my time now to return that. And, you know, I don't get paid for it. I spend my time out of business hours to mentor these wonderful women. So it's humbling to see that the work that I'm doing is getting recognized. And I hope through that, it's able to help encourage other young women in the industry to really give it a go and reach out and find themselves some, you know, someone in the industry they look up to that they can ask questions. Because what I found was, you know, people are happy to help. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help. If you're not sure on your next career choice, if you're not sure perhaps on the direction you want to take and you look up to someone in the industry, tap them on the shoulder, go for a coffee, have a chat and ask them how they got to where they were. And you'd be surprised how open people are about telling you their story. So it's humbling. It is lovely to receive those accolades.
Oh, absolutely. And to your point about getting help in this industry, if you're not getting help in this industry, it's because you're not asking the question, because there are so many people out there willing to go out of their way, as I know, over many, many years. I want to talk about your role as a BDM. And obviously, you know, you've been recognized for your professionalism and how you do that. What would you say is the most difficult part of being in that role?
I think, honestly, it's seeing the hardship of some of the clients and hearing some of the stories, given the market conditions at the moment. I think there's only so much that I can do in terms of, you know, I have guidelines within the organization that I work for that I need to work within. So I need to be upfront and honest on whether we can or can't do a particular risk, for example. But there's been multiple occasions where brokers have come to me and their clients are in dire straits and they're not able to find insurance. And some of the stories behind that of that particular broker trying to run their business and challenges associated. So you're almost becoming a bit of a counsellor around their challenges. And I really enjoy listening and helping and supporting. But sometimes you do feel a little bit helpless and you do wish that you could, you know, wave that magic wand and make it all better. That is definitely one of the harder things, given the hardened market that we are in at the moment.
And thinking about you personally in terms of your career, what would you say has been the most challenging time in your career, Jessica?
So I mentioned earlier that I'd been made redundant when I was 5 months pregnant. So what that meant for me was I'd accomplished this fantastic new role. I'd been there for a year and a half. We were kicking some great goals. And then Chubb and Ace merged and my role at Ace then became redundant. I have to say the business was amazing. They did try to find some alternative options for me internally, but given, you know, the fact that I was almost going to go on maternity leave, it was a little bit challenging. So I found myself sort of taking a real step back in my career. I then worked in a brokerage. And looking back on it now, it was a positive because I got to see firsthand what brokers go through and the challenges, the trials and tribulations that they have on a day-to-day basis. But in my mind at the time, I felt like I'd lost everything that I'd worked hard for. I hit this high. I had goals and ambitions to keep going. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was going back to work. My daughter was 4 months old. My friends who had babies were still on maternity leave. I felt lost and uncertain. And I felt like a bit of a lost cause, to be honest. And looking back now, though, that challenge actually helped shape me. Again, I keep going back to how it's helped shape me and how failures, or what I defined failures to be back then, have helped shape me. But I'm grateful for that opportunity because, or that situation, I should say, if I hadn't gone through that, then I wouldn't be where I am today.
And I think it's the problem that there is that hindsight's a fabulous thing. But at the time, when your world's caving in, it's a difficult place to be. What sort of things did you do to give yourself some sort of release or relief?
Yeah, I think lean on my network, my community. So luckily, I had an amazing husband who just supported me through the whole process. believed in me and continued to remind me that it's only a small setback, Jess. You're still young. You've got plenty of time to really recuperate that career level that you got to, but also, you know, grounding myself and focusing on gratitude. So taking time to really embrace the fact that I have this beautiful gift, Mia, my little baby in my arms, and those moments that I spoke about earlier of really just in taking in how life-changing being a mother can be. So that was a time where I really need to lean on my community around me, friends, family, husband, and really take in that attitude of gratitude rather than, you know, the blame game and the taking out of frustration on everybody else.
So 20 plus years on in the insurance industry, if I said to you, you can change one thing about our industry, what would you change?
That's a great question. Can we change the hardened market?
It will change of its own accord over my 40. Someone, when I first started in insurance, they told me about the warm bath analogy, and I don't know if you've heard it, but they said the insurance market is like the warm bath analogy, which is when you jump in, it's way too hot. Then it gets to the right temperature, but that only lasts for about 30 seconds, and then it's starting to get way too cold. So, and I've never forgotten it. You know, year on year on year, it's been true.
Look, absolutely right. In all honesty, I think it's for the broker market, it would be really the frustrations with some of the limited capacities and changes associated with that hardened market. But I like that analogy though, Mark. It's great.
I've never forgotten it as a young man. And the other thing that that mentor of mine told me, he said, you know, no one ever lies on their deathbed saying, gee, I wish I'd spend more time at the office. There are two things I never forgot.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true, isn't it?
I want to take you back to that 19-year-old who decided to get into politics and then ended up in insurance. If you only knew then what you know now, is there anything you would have devoted more time to or changed?
Absolutely. So it would be physical and mental health, planning my days and setting realistic goals, I think. It is, again, that deer in the headlights that, you know, you want to be everything. You want to rule the world. You want to be, you know, CEO overnight type. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story. I know this is slightly off topic, but I think I was about 20. There was a CEO role that was available at that age. I had no experience on running a business. Guess what I did? I applied for the role. That, I mean, it was great. I made a new connection through that. The, you know, particular recruiter called me and we're now really, really good friends. It is really just, you know, setting realistic goals, planning your days. So what I mean by planning your days is understanding what you're wanting to achieve for that particular day. So what I do now is I set myself, so I get up early and I've got my little planner and I say, well, okay, what is it that I want to achieve out of today? And then I link that to the goal that I've set for the year. It really helps bite size, chunk size, I could say, those particular goals, but also just have fun, enjoying life. Your career is here. It will grow and it will develop if you put your hard work in. But at the same token, if you burn out because you're not exercising, you're not taking time to exercise your mental brain, you're not taking time to spend time with your family, getting that balance around the various different components, you'll end up burning out and then, you know, you get frustrated and frazzled. So definitely focusing on mental and physical health, planning your days and setting realistic goals without sort of wanting to rule Rome in a day, so to speak.
I've got two final questions for you, Jessica Jenkins, before we let you go. The first one is, what do you wish you knew before you started in insurance?
It's okay to fail. It really is. You know, looking back now and going back to my pregnancy story and losing my job, at the time, my world was over. You know, I thought, this is the end. I'm going to have to start from scratch again to rebuild my career and to go back out there again and to start again. Who's going to want to hire somebody that's pregnant and all of those things? But redefine what your definition is of failure, first of all, and understand that it's okay to fail. You learn from your mistakes and just have fun. Take the ride, have fun while you're on the ride, you know, enjoy the people, but also make sure that you don't burn any bridges as well. Not that I ever really did, but I think taking certain, you know, network groups or relationships for granted is something that, you know, being young and naive, you tend to do back when you're younger.
And final question, what's next for Jessica Jenkins?
What's next? So I've got a couple of exciting things up and coming. So I've become a Business in Heels mentor. So Business in Heels is a wonderful organization. So just really giving back to, again, the younger women that want to, I guess, move up the chain or learn from those that may have had some very colourful experiences in my case over the years. I'm also emceeing an Envision Leadership event, and I've got the next women, the WWHOP on International Women's Day. So a couple of exciting things up and coming. Stay tuned.
Thank you so much for spending a bit of time with us on Business Made Personal. I really appreciated it.
Absolute pleasure. And thanks for everything that you're doing for the industry as well, Mark. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thanks, Jessica. Thank you for being with us. Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.